Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always very pleased to be able to broadcast with you, to you, live and in living color. Today was definitely a very good day. Good day because we saw so many of our people, especially brothers and sisters that came in from New York, from Chicago, from Detroit, New Jersey. I mean, it was just wonderful to see all of the people standing together to really focus on one specific thing, but a lot of things, actually, but certainly to make certain that we continue to do the work and we actually step it up some to bring Lumia home. And that's what today kind of echoed throughout the day. Of course, April the 24th was, in fact, the Earth Day for Lumia. And it was a wonderful kickoff for now a campaign that is not only going to focus on the struggle to bring Lumia home, but it's going to focus on, I think, some very important things that are connected to that as well. For example, today, there was not only the thrust to free Lumia, to now really raise the bar, but there was a lot of discussions, or shall we say forums and other kinds of presentations today. I moderated the one on gentrification. There was, of course, one on political prisoners and prisons. There was one on education. So essentially what we're saying is that we're talking about some very powerful sessions. Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. was, of course, there. Brother Youssef Shakur from Detroit came in. There were really a lot of people, and I'm saying that because these folks are not only activists, but really freedom fighters. And so we saw today that our people are very serious about making certain that we bring Lumia home. And we know that it's not impossible because Russell Maroon Schultz is home as well. And, oh, by the way, both his son and daughter were there today. So what we're going to do is we're going to get a few reports on some of what happened today. Brother Mike Graves will be calling in very shortly to finish up our dialogues from last week. I mean, we really kicked it out last week and for the past few weeks in terms of information dealing with COINTELPRO, counterintelligence kinds of operations and so forth. And tonight we're going to finish that segment out and talk to Brother Mike more about some of the sessions that are going to be coming up, actual information and training sessions, so you all will be able to recognize perhaps a little better and to be more prepared to take action in regards to that. And so, again, we're going to talk with Brother Mike about how to recognize COINTELPRO, what to do about it, and so forth and so on. We will probably also talk with, I believe, Chairman Fred, and we're hoping to talk with Dr. Randy Short, because, in case you hadn't heard, Reverend Pinckney was arrested this week. From what we are hearing, the charges is voter fraud, and, of course, you all know Reverend Pinckney. He's not about any kind of voter fraud. That's just so insane. I mean, but even if he was, who is the biggest fraud, Reverend Pinckney or the United States government? I mean, come on. They have us talking about this thing called democracy as if that's something that they really practice. And we all know that anytime you have a constitution that says all men are created equal, and then you make a business of holding people captive, enslaving them, then obviously, something wrong with that picture. So, you know, we want to find out more about what's going on at Reverend Pinckney. I did talk to Dr. Randy Short. the other day when he called to tell me that Reverend Pinckney had been arrested. He also called me yesterday indicating that Reverend Pinckney had been released. And so, you know, we're very glad about that. And he's going to have to go to court or some stuff. So we want to find out exactly what's happening. In the meantime, what we're going to do is we're going to go to our live line. And we weren't able to bring in Sister Coker last week because I think we were really on a roll last week in talking with Brother Mike and Chairman Freer. So we want to make sure that we bring you our history moment for this week. And, of course, our history moments are certainly more than moments. They are truly legacies, and that being they're ongoing. But we've been talking this month about African people who deserve to be recognized, who deserve to have tribute paid to them, who were born in the month of April. And so we are kind of coming to the end of April. I think the last time we spoke with Sister Coker, she did, of course, talk about Mumia Abu-Jamal being born in April. So maybe they did have one last week. Maybe that was the week before, I'm not sure. But anyway, we're going to have one right now in a few minutes. And again, we're going to talk about this week's focus for who we want to examine and pay tribute to as it pertains to our people have made so many accomplishments that, you know, there's no way you can know all of them or try to keep count or anything, but we definitely know that it's vast and that it's, so diverse. And I'm not talking about diverse in the way of how people are pushing diversity today. No, what I'm talking about is just in so many different categories. But at any rate, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to bring in Sister Coker, and we're going to talk about, or let Sister Coker tell us about who it is we're going to be paying tribute tonight that's born in the month of April. And we're talking about a person of African descent or persons of African descent who we want to remember. So without further ado, we're going to bring in Sister Coker, and I think we have to also let you know we've been having some technical difficulties tonight, interestingly enough, so hopefully that will not continue, but if it does, usually we're able to get it straightened out before too long. But I think we have Sister Coker with us now. Sister Coker, do we have you on this line?
Yes.
Very good, very good. Well, I'm telling you, today was incredible. Absolutely incredible. Now, I missed the program for last night, and there was one the night before, and everyone said all of the programs were just absolutely fantastic. But I can tell you about the one for today. I can tell you that it was really, really good. But anyway, we're going to talk more about that shortly. What do you have for us tonight?
This is the final Saturday of April, and we'll be featuring jazz singer Billie Holiday, born on the 17th. And, of course, everybody was born in April. She was born on the 17th, 1915, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
A lot of people realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And she unfortunately died 1959 in New York. Lionel Hampton, the first jazz musician to play the vibraphone, he also played the drums, harmonica, sang, and he did other instruments. He was born the 12th, 1908, in Louisville, Kentucky. Now, I don't have a death date for him, but I assume that he has transitioned.
I do believe so. I'll check it out shortly, but I'm almost certain that he did.
Herbie Hancock was born the 12th in 1940. Of course,
okay.
He is a composer and a pianist, and he is one of the top jazz people of this time.
Mm-hmm.
Ella Fitzgerald on the 25th in 1917, Newport News, Virginia, died June 15th. 1996 in Beverly Hills, and she was known as the First Lady of Song, with Sarah Vaughan being one of her main competitors. And as you know, I think Sarah Vaughan was the greatest singer ever. Our own David P. Richardson Jr., who did so much with so many, was born the 23rd, 1948, and transitioned August 18th, 1995. And we're still saddened by his departure. Singer Minister Al Green was born the 13th. In 1946, and of course he's still with us. Tony Brown was born the 11th, and he's still with us. And Gil Scott-Heron, I don't have a date on his coming or leaving, but he, of course, was a great poet.
Yes, and yes. I think he was. I think his Earth Day was April the 3rd, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely an artist. In a caliber of his own. Okay.
That's pretty much what I have in reference to that. They were the ones I was able to find. I'm sure there are more people born in April. But I just found with this. Now, although Stokely Carmichael did not coin the phrase Black Power, he did popularize it.
Yes.
And then we heard cries of white power, which later became white supremacy. Now, given there's only one supreme being, the whites who embrace supremacy are merely supremacist wannabes. Now, when we indigenous Africans born in the United States of North America politely call people who hate themselves and others supremacists, we do ourselves a disservice. So therefore, we are encouraged to refer to the heinous doctrine of white supremacy as white supremacy wannabes, because that's all they are. They just want to be that. And my suggestion is to call them white supremacists wannabes. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, you know, Sister Koga, I think that really kind of allows us to enter into a interesting segment. And actually, a little later on, when we bring Brother Mike on and probably Chairman Fred Hampton, we're going to talk a little bit more about what I call global white domination, because they are definitely trying to do that. Okay. Now, I think we're going to open up the lines on that one, because there's been, on this program as well as on other programs, kind of a similar discussion about white supremacy and should people really call it that. Now, you all, of course, know there's also debates about other kinds of things. Should we call ourselves black? Should we call ourselves this, African-American? You know, and that debate or that argument or discussion continues. Well, what do you all think about white supremacy? Do you think this is a terminology that we should utilize in describing the behavior that we see folks of European descent that we often see, but perhaps more importantly, a system that reeks of a certain type of not just behavior, but actions that tend to be overwhelmingly devastating for people of color, clearly for people of African descent. So let's take a few minutes. Let's take 5 or 10 minutes to kind of hear what you all have to say. If you have a comment about white supremacy or not white supremacy or what Sister Coca is suggesting with saying white wannabe supremacy, what do you think? It's a popular phrase today. It's been around for quite a while, but is this what we should call this system of what we're dealing with today? if you have a comment, please press 1 now, and we'll certainly hear what it is that you have to say. Okay, we do. This looks like Sister Hattie going to come in on this one. Let's see if that's Sister Hattie that we have right here, Sister Coker. Okay, 3662. Is this Sister Hattie?
This is Sister Hattie.
All right. And I want to thank you, Sister Hattie, because we put the call out for May the 10th for Marissa Alexander Awareness and Action Day. And we are so thankful that some of our sisters in particular are doing that. I mean, sisters, and I have to put it out there. And I mean, brothers, too, we need your help and support also. But sisters, come on. Come on. But so, Sister Hattie, thank you again. So go ahead.
My pleasure. I was excited to do that. So we do have a campaign here in Minneapolis that we're putting it out there. And I've been talking to some really young people around here who do the social media piece far beyond what I could even dream of, Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest, so they can do that. But this white supremacy piece is definitely on the rise, and I'm going to take you guys back to a comment that I made from a paper I had read many weeks ago with Judge Dale. I don't know if anybody ever took a peek at that. But what he talked about was, and, you know, the white supremacy piece has always been there, but the piece that most of us remember is how the Nazis did the Jews.
Yes.
And so what this Judge Dale said, who is a white retired judge, he said, that's how the CIA was started here in the United States of America. It was started with all of those individuals that had been Nazis in Germany. Okay? And so here's what we have. That's why we're starting to feel the brunt of all this stuff. This stuff is since President Truman has been, and it's growing and it's growing and it's growing. And guess what? This is like a war. It's a battle. It's a spiritual war. It's a spiritual battle, and it is also in the natural. So we have to, I believe, fight it different ways. So that's what I'm saying about that white supremacy piece. But I wanted to weigh in on Reverend Pinckney as well, just in case Dr. does not get on. We were talking, Dr. Shard and a group of us, about what we were going to do to help Reverend Pinckney when we heard that he had been arrested. Now, this is the interesting thing about that piece. After he was released and let go, I guess this is what the judge put him on house arrest. He can't be near a computer. And so basically, that's the white supremacy right there. You use law enforcement anytime you come up with something called fraud, blah, blah, blah. We all know what that is. You're getting ready to be a political prisoner because that's their catch-all for shutting Negroes down. People don't have freedom of speech anymore as far as this country is concerned. And if you think you do, you can just forget it because it's not happening. They're going to keep after you and keep after you and keep after you and do this and do that and do the other until they just try to wear you out. But what they do not understand is that God put some things in some of the people. It's just not going to happen like that. We're just going to keep on and keep on and keep on as well and supporting each other. So I just hope Reverend Pinckney knows that he has some support. And the interesting thing about that Benson Harbor deal is this. Why has nobody on the national circuit picked up that Benton Harbor has recalled its mayor, and they're supposed to have a recall election May or whatever it is. And so they're trying to stop it by calling it fraud, something he did by having something about two names on that same person's name on twice and then a date changed on when a person signed. You know that's garbage baloney.
Wow.
You got to know that.
Yeah.
It's white supremacy work and the enforcement.
It's really, very interesting because this is almost what happened to him before.
Exactly.
And here we are again seeing something very similar. Now, I'm glad you mentioned what you did because I've been trying to reach Reverend Pinckney, and there's never been a time that I have not tried to reach Reverend Pinckney that I could not reach him. I've been knowing Reverend Pinckney for quite a few years now. In fact, he was on our radio program when he was going through the trial initially a few years back. We had him on our program both before he went to trial and afterwards. So we're very familiar with, the work that he's doing there in Benton Harbor. So it seems that not only is he not able to get to a computer, I don't know, but it sounds like he might not be able to use the phone either.
That is true, and that's their whole premise. When you start being effective like that, using democracy, their own rules and laws, they really have to shut you down. That is a form of white supremacy, and I'm so sad to say that many of the people who are not white, they can't run those plays unless we play with them, some of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And they can
mm-hmm.
run those plays because some of the black people help them.
Wow.
Run those plays.
And then we're going to go to Sister Coker and hear what her response is again. But with that said, that's some of what we talked about today at our forum for gentrification. The fact that many have been saying, and I'm finding this very interesting, and I'm happy to hear it, by the way. We've been having a lot of discussions about gentrification, i.e. placement, land grabbing, and definitely how developers are making money off of getting rid of black folks or letting city governments getting rid of black folks from their communities. Well, we had that discussion, and it's very interesting that a lot of what people are saying is that it is in many cases, so-called elected officials that have sat back and let this stuff happen.
Absolutely.
Meaning they are very responsible because they knew this stuff was going on. And rather than to help inform the people, rather than to help the people to be more ready, they sat back and made deals with these people, the developers,
that's
that
right.
is.
That's right. It's all selfishness. It's about climbing the career ladder. It's not about us collectively trying to work, make the world better. And I don't care really me what color you are. We need to make this place better, called the United States of America. And it's frankly not happening fast enough. And whether they know it or not, it will catch up with them ultimately. But Reverend Pinckney's story, you see, you look over at Wisconsin, and it was all over the news when they tried to recall Scott.
Right.
Okay? Mr. Wisconsin governor was trying to get recalled. And there are some things like that going on all over, but nobody's wanting to talk about them on the national news media. And I say that deserves a national news presence. However,
absolutely.
We don't know yet if it's ever going to happen. So,
well, I'm very concerned.
Me too. We are. It's just
I'm
awful.
Very concerned, especially, I was concerned when I heard that he had been arrested, but I'm also very mm-hmm. concerned now because by him not being able to communicate, it really creates too much, we don't know what's going on, and that's not good. That is just not good. So we're going to have to try to figure
right.
out how we can change that.
Right.
Because
one of the things when he first was arrested,
mm-hmm.
they kept telling Randy they didn't have him. Dr. Short, they said, we don't have him. And
mm-hmm.
some of us, I got in touch with some churches in Detroit in prison ministry the next
mm-hmm.
morning. And all of a sudden, we were able to find him. And the person I was just in was asking them about it. And I was just very thankful. Because one of the things we have to find people that are aware of and know how to navigate the systems. And so I just listened
right.
to this minister talk to these deputies lecture people over there of what was going on and the questions I wouldn't have even thought to ask, she did. And she's been doing prison ministry for like 20 years. So we have to just learn to use whomever we can to get whatever we need to get done, done. And try
Absolutely.
To be collectively on the same page. We have a lot of commonalities, but we also, you know, just can't throw it, you know, throw it all out, baby out with the bathwater. We got to kind of just let each one do what they can do. Like I had said before with the Marissa Alexander piece and the national presence that Reverend Al Sharpton could give on that. But knowing where the person's, what do you call it, strengths are and what their areas of improvement and weaknesses are. Just
wow.
And honest. I mean, that's the only way we're going to move ahead here. We just have to use what the snapshot that we can. So anyway, I will be quiet at that moment, but I was so
okay,
upset.
Well, let's go back to Sister Coca for a minute, and I think we're going to have Brother Mike calling in. Yep, I think he's just about ready to join us. And we want to remind you, family, we're going to do two things when we talk with Brother Mike. One is to get his report on today's activities. A lot of folks came in from New York today, and we want to, of course, have Brother Mike and others to share some of what they saw today with the Celebration of Life, Bring Lumi a Home Now event. But before we do that, we're going to go back to Sister Coca real quick, and then Brother Mike can also come in on this question as well. And that is, Sister Coca just raised the issue of the cliche or the phrase or the idea of what we say, white supremacy. Sister Coca feels that by us saying white supremacy, that we're kind of giving them that, meaning we're helping them to say that they're supreme. Now, of course, that's an argument I'm sure that many of you have heard before, and to some degree it's a valid thought. So now what Sister Coca suggested is that we maybe want to say white wannabe supreme. I kind of like that. I think it's good myself. But I want to go back to Sister Coca before we bring in Brother Mike. And Sister Coca, you just heard what Sister Hattie said. Let's get your comment. And then we're going to get ready to go and talk with our Brother Mike, who joins us today in Philly. And we're going to hear also from some of you, because we are going to talk about Reverend Pinckney some more. And certainly make certain that we let him know that we do love him, we love his work, and we appreciate his work. We want to make sure he knows that. But anyway, Sister Coca, give us a few minutes. Give us a response to Sister Hattie.
Well, as always, she's very informed, very gracious, and it's always good to listen to what she's saying. But as far as the way things are today, the demonic spirits who are in control are out of control. And I'm just wondering what really can be done to bring about a change. That's my question. What really can be done? I mean, I know we can stop giving them their proper by calling them white supremacists. And adding white supremacist wannabes, because they're definitely not supremacists.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't know. I'm at a loss as far as what we can do to bring about a change, because it is so out of control. I mean, the people who are in control are decimating the population because the resources are running out. I'm just at a loss for words, quite honestly.
Okay. All right. Well, Sister Hattie, your closing comment.
Well, I would say what we have to do is stay diligent, and I believe our critical piece of something to do is to make sure we try to bring in our young people so that they really understand this piece around how we need to move forward and do some think tanks and do the action plans and get it done, get some stuff done. We just, I think that that's the critical part, is to build that bridge between some of the young ones who are willing.
Well, I'm going to go ahead.
I mean, how do we bring the children in? And one of the things we need to do is definitely call our children children, because they have become that word. We call them kids.
Absolutely. Children is, words are very powerful. I totally agree with you. I'm very careful about calling them what they are, the young people, the children.
I mean, we fear our children today. And when you have a society that fears their children, disrespects their elders, and celebrates perversion, what do you have? And by perversion, I mean people who aren't really what they are getting their proper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I, as I said, I'm at a loss. I really am. I'm just grieved over how things have progressively worsened.
Mm-hmm.
When I was here in the 40s, and I went through the 60s and thought that we had finally arrived, and now we're just going backwards.
And again, I think it's important to understand and overstand, as many say, a little better as to why. What happened? And I'm going to go back to what has been said, and then we're going to go to our mic, and we're going to talk again with our brother, who, again, is just so on point, as he has been for the past couple of weeks. Brother Mike Graves is going to be joining us in a few minutes, and we're going to talk now about dealing with counterintelligence, COINTELPRO, and the likes. We want to get more into, because over the past few weeks we've been talking about what it is, how it is, and so forth. But we haven't really talked about what we can, should do about it. And let's go back to what you just said, Sister Coker, and what Sister Hattie often says as well. And that is, we have to take on some responsibility. And what I mean by that is, we let some of this happen. It didn't happen just by accident. It didn't happen without people knowing to some degree. It's just like with gentrification. There's no way that people can tell me today, including myself, that we didn't see our communities begin to deteriorate. Unfortunately, because we are often preoccupied, for lack of a better word, with surviving and doing other things that is relevant to, you know, our families and communities, that when these things hit, we were not as proactive, because this system has us constantly dealing with the day-to-day reality. But the fact still remains, many saw it. But the fact also remains, some of these politicians knew it, and not only knew it, but assisted in it. And we've got to now hold them accountable. That's the bottom line. So with that said, my sisters, I want to thank you both again. And we're going to talk more about white supremacy. Should we call it that? That's the question for tonight, family. We're going to open up the chat room, as a matter of fact. In about 10 minutes or so, we're going to open up the chat room. And if you have a comment about white supremacy, should we call it white supremacy? Are we giving them kind of, you know, some energy when we say white supremacy? This is what the discussion has been, or the argument has been, or the thought process has been, or what your thought is. So, again, we're going to open up the chat room in maybe 10, 15 minutes. And please feel free to post your comments. All right. Thank you, sisters. Okay. You're very welcome. Okay, Sister Amy, I think I see you, and I want you to stay right there. We're going to come back to you. I want to bring in Brother Mike now, and we want to really focus on or get a report on what happened today at the Celebration of Life for Mumia Abdul-Jamal. I want to tell you, it was some high energy going on today, and this really exemplifies what we can do. Black folks, please, let us get it together. We can make a difference. Our ancestors made a difference. We can do this. We must. So we're going to go back to our live line, and we're going to bring in our brother, Mike Graves, and we're going to talk first about, or, you know, get some insight into some of what happened today, but we're going to really go into counterintelligence, COINTELPRO, or whatever you want to call it today. There's, you know, there's many names, actually. And there's people in our community that not only exercise, you know, do whatever they can to disrupt, dismantle, et cetera, et cetera. The question is, do you know when you when it's there in your midst? I can tell you, I failed at some point, okay, and I'm sure some of you are too, but let's try to prevent that for the future. At least let us be aware enough to begin to recognize some of the signs, for lack of a better word, or some of the operations, for a better word. And so, again, what we're going to do now is open up our mic again, and we're going to bring in our brother. Again, he was here in Philly. It was so good to get my hug, and I just feel all the positive energy that he and Sister Keisha and so many others, not just from New York, but, again, from all over the country, assembled here today in Philadelphia to let it be known very loudly, very clearly, that it's time to bring Mumia home. So that's it. We're going to go to our live line, and joining us now is Brother Mike Graves. Hey, brother, you there?
Yes, I am, sis. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. After today? Absolutely wonderful.
Well, I thought today was excellent, and my understanding is that this caps off the third leg of a long celebration that goes back to Thursday.
Right.
And I wasn't there Thursday or Friday. We came in today, and certainly you had people from all over the country there, and this is symbolic and well-deserved for the support we need for Mumia Abu-Jamal. Now, certainly I saw a lot of signs and T-shirts of the like saying, Free Mumia. And certainly while that's apropos, the fact is they're not going to free Mumia.
Right.
The only way that he can come home is through another trial. So while we continue to use the language to say free Mumia, that's all well and fine. As long as someone else understands that the only way that the white power structure or white supremacy will let him go is through another trial. He will have to go through the legal system. That is the only way. There's no other way under the sun. It's not like they're going to wake up one morning and hear the clarion call or get an epiphany about freedom of me, and that's not going to happen. As long as there's one white person on this planet, he's going to stay in jail until he goes through the legal process, and he never got a fair day in court, obviously, with the COINTELPRO system. So he would have to have the right lawyers at the right time in place to this time hit a home run. They have a plethora of information to show you contradiction after contradiction in the original case. All they need is a day in court. So I would wish that some of us out there would push for that, a day in court, because when you hear Pam and so many others lay this all out, they have so much information now that they didn't have 30 years ago, that if they were able to, in any reasonable courtroom that's just somewhat, that has a reasonable facsimile of fairness, he's going to walk out of there. It has to be a court process. The only remedy for his freedom will be in a courtroom, and it's going to take a team of dedicated lawyers that want to go to war. They don't have to be brilliant. And I'm going to repeat that. They do not have to be brilliant. Just bring the facts. You don't need a great narrative. If you bring the facts, I am confident that he'll walk out of there. If they bring the facts, but it takes courage. It doesn't take brilliance. It's going to take courage because
right.
a courtroom is a battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
If these lawyers are truly prepared to go to war and fight a principal fight and not be worried about what's going to happen after that case with their careers, if they are dead set on freeing him, it will not require brilliance. It will require the heart to state the facts as they are. Frederick Douglass, when he was invited to a July the 4th celebration, did not talk about white folks behind their back. The very same people who invited them there, he laid it out and let them know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, how he felt about their celebration of July the 4th, inviting him there, one who had endured chattel slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And he let them know straight up what the situation was and how he felt about them, and told them basically that your behavior, the behavior of white supremacy, would embarrass a land of savages. And so if you can get three or four lawyers together working hard, just being the bearer of facts, Mumia walks. The science is in Mumia's favor. The forensics is in his favor. The facts,
right.
as they line up in timelines and in all the things from the moment he lay there next to a cop, everything is in his favor. You know, the people who came forward and said they were forced or they were co-opted in, by one way or another to say certain things, all that's in his favor. All he needs is a day in court. So while we champion Free Mumia, let's have some voices, let's have some efforts and get another trial. Because if he gets another trial, he'll walk. That's my opinion, and it's not based on emotionalism. I'm not romanticizing Mumia at all. If he has his true day in court, the facts will free him.
Now, Brother Mike, with that said, some would argue that this was done, that there were a few lawyers who were, the representation, the legal representation during the course of these 30 years, that some of them did, or one or two of them did present the facts. One or two of them did share, what happened. It wasn't the caliber, this and that and the other, but it didn't matter.
Well,
so
I think that I think you're right.
What would make the difference now?
Well, time, place, and circumstance. I think it's pretty safe to say that he is the best known inmate in the world, bar none.
That's true. That is true.
I think the eyes of the entire world will be looking at this case, and believe me, when you want to continue a lie, and if you want to continue to conceal the truth, it gets more difficult the more lights that are on it. Make the lights bright as you can at this next trial. And I think that even though what you said was accurate, that some of these contradictions did come out already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, if it was fair, then Sabo and all these other ones won't be there.
Right.
And that is a welcome relief, to have. I mean, it'll almost be a soft cushion if you have just some fair-minded people just concerned with the law. And I think that the only way he's getting out is through the court system. That's it.
Right.
Unless somebody's going to, replicate in some way or another something like what happened to Asada, is going to have to be through the courts. There's no other way there's no, an epiphany is not going to happen.
Mm.
So this is the only way through the court system.
Wow.
There is no level of time that's going to be a point where they say, you know, all is forgiven. It's not going to happen. 10 years from now, 15 years from now, they're not going to say, you know, well, he served enough time, let him walk. If he's 80 years old, 90 years old, he will still remain in jail as long as there's breath in his body, unless he goes through the court system. And those are the facts. There, no time frame is going to allow him to just walk and say, okay, he's bent over, he's weak, he's, you know, he can barely move now, he's sick.
Right.
You know, we're going to let him go. They're not going to do it. So the only way is the court system. Any other way, we can't discuss on radio or anyway.
Right. So just for the sake of saying this, so for those who think that perhaps, and this is a big, you know, kind of perhaps to say the least, those who have said or thought perhaps that when Obama was in his last year, that perhaps he could issue clemency, since they are allowed to do something.
That's
like
not based
that.
On his behavior. Now, you can think that, you know, anyone who wants to think that about President Barack Obama can think mm-hmm. that if they want to. But do not tell me you're basing it on prior behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he won't, if the clarion call came out to him with respect to when America was in free fall economically, and he put a bandage on that, and he in turn, when the unemployment rate was knocking on double digits, and he did something about that, he put white men back to work. And he has done absolutely nothing for black people. He's done nothing for us. Even that little bit he did with the black farmers is nothing compared to what he did for white farmers. So if he can't tackle that, because other things, he puts the law and the money behind it, whether it's immigration, whether it's same-sex marriage and things like that, he seems to be freed up to engage in those things. He's got black folks telling us he's not the president of black America.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, giving him excuse after excuse. There comes a time where we have to stop apologizing for a man that's not apologizing for himself. He laid his heart bare at AIPAC. Mm-hmm. And so if he can get before AIPAC and say these things and beg, I mean, pledge his undying support to the state of Israel,
mm-hmm.
and yet he didn't receive one vote from the state of Israel, but he received in excess of 97% of our vote and at extremely high numbers, then why are we making excuses for a man who's not making excuses for himself? He's made it perfectly clear how he feels in terms of how he's going to negotiate black America. And nothing in his history is showing he's going to give clemency to Mumia. It's nothing. It's not even close. I mean, anybody that wants to do that, I will sell them the Brooklyn Bridge. I mean, it's so ridiculous. I almost feel sorry for anybody that feels that way, because they're in a mythological dream world. There's nothing even remotely close that he would do anything like that. I mean, he's not going to even give clemency to some other people where it's rather clear they didn't do what they did. I mean, Mumia? Are you kidding me? He's going to face the wrath of whether it's the Confederate States, whether it's FOP, whether it's his very own FBI, and even though Eric Holder is there, he would have so many forces after him, and he doesn't do well when you have given your whole life to endear yourself to those outside of our community. Come on, I mean, it's not going to happen. And why would we want to gamble Mumia's life on a whim that we know is so far-fetched? Let's build up an environment where they have to give him another trial. Even if the agreement is last trial, this is it. And put it this way, I would go with a trial even if the stakes were high, where it's now the death penalty is reintroduced. And the thing is, he either walks or the death penalty. That would be preferable to him just rotting away in jail.
Right, no doubt.
Because we could say Free Mumia, they're not going to free him. You can't pick one person, prominent, powerful, white person, that will allow it. Until long as the last man is standing, that's not going to happen, except through the court system. Not going to happen. Okay. And there's nothing in Obama's character that could show that he would even let a Wesley Snipes go. So how is he going to let Mumia go? Please.
Okay. Well, family, I think we've got the picture and got some insight into this whole issue, because I'm not sure we talked about it here on our radio program, but I'm certain it has been discussed in certain circles. I've been in a few of them and have heard that discussion.
Do you all watch Community Cop in Philly, by the way? You have to tell
we
people
do not.
To watch. Do you all watch it?
No. Where? How can we access it?
All you have to do is go online, ManhattanNeighborhoodNetwork.org.
Okay.
Every Tuesday at 5 o'clock.
Okay.
ManhattanNeighborhoodNetwork.org.
All right. I got it.
5 o'clock every Tuesday. Our show is on. 5
o'clock every Tuesday. Okay.
ManhattanNeighborhoodNetwork.org.
Got it. Okay, very good. I certainly will be tuning in this week.
Okay, good. So that's, you know, and they can watch us, you know, anybody in the country, just go online and watch the show. It's always something going on that needs to be discussed.
Wonderful. Okay, well, let's fast forward for a minute or so and go into one of the topics that a lot of our people have been responding to, Brother Mike, as you well know, and that is this issue of counterintelligence in our community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are not only interested in knowing more about it, but really, you know, they really want to get some insight. We've, of course, talked about what it is, why it is, needless to say, and some of what has happened in the past, of course, that has clearly demonstrated, you know, its diabolical kind of reality for us. But the question now has to be, as we have discussed, how can we be more aware or clearer today in the 21st century?
Okay, well, I would say from the outset that without being paranoid, understand what the stakes are.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a system in place in your organization where if you have an open enrollment type of organization, meaning that the members are not operating on an invite only, and you have an open enrollment where anybody could just come in. They don't have to explain who they were recruited by. They just heard about your organization and decided to pop in. Then there will be a level of penetration. And even though electronic surveillance and monitoring systems and intercepting messages. All of that is a part of counterintelligence. There's nothing like penetration. There has to be. That's the earmark of counterintelligence. So with all the information you can gather electronically and using technology, the fact is to have on-site human intelligence is always the order of the day. So one can wonder, how could Maurice Bishop be penetrated by people on this side of the Atlantic? It happened with Bernard Cord. See, the thing people have to understand about intelligence systems and counterintelligence, once they understand your nature, your foundation, how you react to certain things, science kicks in, not emotion. Science kicks in. This is a long tried and tested method. They have people that sit in rooms that all they do is profile. They have people that study voice inflections to see, are you serious about what you say? They have people that look at your body language, sis, while you're talking. And they'll know, are you just repeating something you heard, or are you serious about that? Is that your true intent? This science, you know, if 70 or 80% of what you communicate is nonverbal, they have people studying you day and night. And then you combine that with on-site human intelligence, people that interface with you and dialogue with you and gather this information and take them back. You might be the leader on paper, sis, but suppose somebody else is really the real inspirational leader in the room. It takes human intelligence to find that out. Though on paper, you're the leader. The person next to you is the one that says, are you sure you want to do that? Maybe we should move this way. They need to know that. So it needs to be another person there. As I said, penetration is the order of the day. So with all this science, you need all these things. You combine all these things. You know, how was Malcolm separated from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad? You know, as I said, Maurice Bishop and Bernard Cord. Look what happened to Lumumba.
Yeah.
On the inside. So you don't think that there's things that are being done now against Mugabe? I mean, are you kidding me? They don't allow situations like that to exist forever. I mean, they have people that are waiting to toast the champagne once he's toppled. And congratulations and attaboys are going to be given out. So they have people that think these things through. They profile. They develop dossiers on everybody. Consequently, they know how to get inside your head. They know what factors will trigger you to do certain things. They anticipate and make things that you do predictable. This is all part of counterintelligence. You're not going to surprise somebody that's studying you 24 hours a day. When they decided they wanted Marion Barry, did they have a problem getting him? They brought in a sister from the other side of the country who they busted carrying cocaine. And they told her what she had to do. And she said, yes, I can get him to a hotel. Are you sure? Yes, if I tell him to come to this hotel, I'll get him. She was trying to get out of jail. The same way Reverend Sharpton was trying to avoid jail. So it's not always money. I mean, money is a great incentive, but it's not the only incentive. They will catch you out of pocket And once they catch you out of pocket, they give you the choice of jail or this is what you have to do. That sister probably didn't want to do that to Mayor Barry, but she did it, and they brought him down.
Mm-hmm.
And this is done time and time again. This wasn't done ad hoc. This was science. These counterintelligence programs that Hoover put together. Now, people can laugh and joke about Hoover and say things about his personal life all they want. They'll never have the impact that he had on America in close to 50 years.
Yes.
What he was able to do through penetration, through information, through gathering information, utilizing counterintelligence techniques, many of whom he invented himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that whole background working in the library helped him because he understood the importance of gathering information. And so when there are certain organizations, if you do the proper profile of these organizations, they have existing weaknesses. What do I mean by an existing weakness, sister? If you look at certain organizations, they're built on different types of foundations.
Right.
It might be
mm-hmm.
built from the bottom up or the top down, but they might have figures in certain positions that, based on their job description, they do certain things. So you can
mm-hmm.
counter it from a distance based on the way they set up their operation. Based on, is it a cult of personality? I mean, is it a different type of leadership? They will break this all down. And when you get 8, 10, 15 people in room dedicated to the best ways
mm-hmm.
to debunk what you're doing, they'll come up with some real good things, some real good solutions, because these things are tied and tested. Now, I'm not saying that to put a damper on anything that we're involved with, whether it's a
mm-hmm.
civic group, whether it's a block association, whether it's a nationalist slash pan-Africanist organization. Do what you do. But I'm just saying, why are you doing that? Have that understanding and don't accuse people that have really got good heart, good intentions of being brought in to do X, Y, and Z. As I said, they can do a lot of these things without having a so-called snitch in the group. But they will put an extra two or three people in your organization, and those other two or three people won't even know each
mm-hmm.
other. You understand? And so they want a consistency in the information that's brought back. So if A, B, and C report back to the FBI, the Black Desk at the FBI, and one says one thing, they'll question the other two, well, why didn't you say, didn't this happen? Why didn't you tell me? So they'll shake them up, and everybody will come back with thorough reports after that because they don't know about each other. So I'm saying that when you set up a system, no system is foolproof. Let's say in 100
mm-hmm.
blacks in law enforcement, our enrollment is by invite only. So when we invite somebody to come to a meeting, just by that alone, we're going to turn. The leadership, we'll turn to that person if something goes awry. We're
mm-hmm.
going to say, well, didn't you bring them in?
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on? We're going to question that person.
Right.
So I'm saying, but in an organization where it's an open enrollment, that's very difficult because they can say, oh, I heard about you on TV, or I heard from so-and-so. I just walked in here. Anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying, yeah, and of course there's a place for accountability and things like that, but, you know, when Hoover said, you know, any two people that's planning on doing something, there's an FBI agent behind the mailbox, he wasn't joking.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Everybody's being observed, and that's why we also need principled people that, you know, that at least you could take the threatening fact of jail out of it if you're not doing anything. That doesn't mean they won't trump something up on you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I believe that, you know, from what I've seen, Mumia did not shoot that cop.
Yes.
But they got him anyway. They got him off the street. They took him out of a position where he could teach our people and help provide leadership. They got him out anyway. But they still used other black people to do it.
Right. And so, and interestingly, you know, enough, that kind of really clearly also indicates something else, meaning, you know, it appears that there's oftentimes a play, meaning an action, is utilized to set an example. And in this case, I think it worked because you have so many people today that are afraid. So my point being, they use people as examples to say, well, okay, this Negro over here is running their mouth or trying to do some stuff to help y'all. Let me show you what we're going to do to him. And that way some of you get the message that y'all need not to be trying to do this kind of stuff, because if you do, this is going to happen to you, or this is what can happen to you. So I think that message went out loudly and clearly, of course, being followed up by a bomb being dropped here in Philadelphia, and just the numerous other kinds of things that we now see today. So it seems that there are subtle but yet not so subtle messages that are being sent to us, that those of you who think you want to be about trying to help y'all people, let me tell you what we got for you.
Well, let me give you an example, and I'll even tie this in with the workshops today.
Mm-hmm.
One of the workshops that I attended today was by a lawyer, Michael Cord, I think was his name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're familiar with him.
And what he was basically talking about was saying using guerrilla warfare tactics, I think is what he called it. And he stressed something that's obvious, but he needed to stress it nonetheless, about not saying anything.
Right.
When you're being arrested. You know, and he stressed something that everyone in law enforcement knows. There's absolutely nothing that you say can help you ill affect this arrest.
What?
Nothing.
It says very clearly.
And it's so simple
you
that
say shall and will be
used against you.
That's right.
So by subject of definition, there's nothing you can say that can help you, so why should you say anything?
Mm-hmm.
There's no magic words you could say to a police officer that you're going to now, okay, you can magically walk away now. If you're going to be arrested anyway, or you've been arrested and now there's some dialogue going on, what can you say that's going to help you? But you can say a whole lot of things that's going to hurt you. So I thought that was good that he took something very, very basic and made it plain in that workshop. I thought it was great, the workshop that the educators did. They're under attack.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to tie it in with the other thing you discussed earlier before I was on, should we use the term white supremacy, and what is it? Is that helping them? This is white supremacy at its finest, where you can use the tentacles of white supremacy to incarcerate people. You can use those same tentacles and its machinations to put educators under attack, where universities, educators have to watch what they teach. And if you get on the bad side, you'll be moved on and fired and persecuted, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this was in the workshops. These are all part and parcel of white supremacy. Now, when you set up that type of environment and then, you know, taking into consideration armed services, whether it's the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, then you have intelligence gathering, FBI, CIA, NSA, you know, Department of Defense, all of that military, you know, intelligence, all of this stuff. It encircles you. Then you have the business sector. You have the educational sector. You just have all these Fortune 500 corporations. You have a whole gamut surrounding the black community. And then you get into other things, where our water supply is coming from, the food, where is that coming from, and then jobs and all, so many other things that there is such a thing as white supremacy. And it's powerful and it's overpowering. I mean, when you think about it, you know, a preacher is not in a position to deal with Marines. You understand what I'm saying?
Certainly.
Most of our leaders are preachers. And how are they? They are not trained, prepared to deal with the NSA, the CIA. And so our organizations, most of us would have to redo from top to bottom our organizations, because now we do know about a counterintelligence program. We do know about local police agencies and their black desks. Now, here in New York, let me give you an example, sis, that you might not know. Our first black commissioner we had was Ben Ward. This was under Edward Koch, so we're talking about 30 years ago. During that time, there was a black desk in New York, and there's a black desk now, but there was a black desk then, right? When it was discovered that there was a black desk where the NYPD was monitoring black organizations all over the city, the police commissioner, Ben Ward, shut the desk down. Now, he said he didn't know it existed, which is frightening, where the police commissioner doesn't know what his subordinates are doing. So he said he didn't know that the black desk existed. At the same time, it operated without him, and then if he knew it existed, then he allowed it to happen. If he didn't know it existed, then that's even more frightening.
Right.
So he shut it down, supposedly. Now, if they could operate without him, then what is that saying to him? And to the rest of us, if whites within a lower rank can have an intelligence gathering mechanism that the police commissioner who served, who was in a cop over 30-something years, he ain't know nothing about it.
Right.
Allegedly. So I'm saying that with this information, we have to, from top to bottom, train not only our leaders who are not prepared for that. We have elected officials that are afraid of their own shadow. They don't come in the spirit of Adam Clayton Powell, who exposed the relationship between mobsters. You know what Reverend Sharpton claimed that he was doing? Adam Clayton Powell did that.
Right.
Adam Clayton Powell showed a relationship between organized crime and the police department, and identified their bag lady, Esther Jane. So I'm saying Adam Clayton Powell did that, but he didn't have an army. He didn't have an organization. He was an elected official, and he was not prepared to take on the NYPD by himself, and they brought him down. He couldn't even come to town. Only he used to come in on Sundays and preach for a while, and then they even took that. And they got him out of Congress. He ran again and got back, and at that time he was a very sick man, and he was dying. So I'm saying they brought down the best elected official we've ever had with counterintelligence. And in the process, it created such a chilling effect that now these cowardly Negroes got an excuse. So the elected officials we produce now, they got an excuse. Well, I don't want what happened to Adam to happen to me. Just like attorneys. Every attorney is not like an automatic. So you have attorneys that, Arthur Lewis was threatened not to support Limerick Nelson in the federal case. Now, Limerick Nelson, to your listener might not know, was the one accused of killing a Jewish person in the Crown Heights Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, Limerick Nelson won on a state level because of the brilliance of Arthur Lewis, a great attorney.
Mm-hmm.
But in the federal case, when they came back and went to the elected officials, and the current Schumer, who's now was a congressman at the time, but now he's the U.S. senator, the senior senator from New York State, pushed for federal charges and got him. And so on that level, Arthur Lewis was threatened that he couldn't take that case, and he got calls from all over the country advising him not to take the case, or he would lose his license, similar to what happened to Alton Maddox.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he didn't take the case. And, of course, Limerick Nelson was just thrust to the dogs. And, of course, he was convicted. Mm-hmm. And all they had to do was follow what Arthur Lewis did on the local level, on the state level. But they didn't do that. So I'm just saying our best lawyers just think about their own career. And they're told, we need this one. And they comply.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying, when we think of white supremacy, believe me, it's tentacles are everywhere, top to bottom. So we have to develop stronger organizations. Look, with all the penetration that the Nation of Islam had, they survived and came back after under insurmountable odds. And I'm saying that we need that intestinal fortitude in our organizations, because if we don't have that, then we're ill-prepared. And if you don't prepare to win these battles, then you're preparing to fail. And we have to get better at this late date because the stakes are too high.
But so, Brother Mike, it really seems, and I certainly, want to hear your response to this, but it seems that this has happened. Meaning our organizations that are supposed to be about our people have become not only weak, but have become almost ridiculous. And I say that in this regard, meaning the majority of the so-called leadership groups, organizations, whatever, are 501c3s.
Mm-hmm.
And see, this, to me, is a phenomenon that has happened over these past 20 years in particular. When this government began to see how we were moving forward, it seems that they had to do something to weaken that. And the introduction of this 501c3 thing, or whatever you want to call it, even if you don't have a 501c3, whatever the grant hookup is, all of that. So now, that took us away from the concept of self-determination,
mm-hmm.
of doing things, believed in it, and because we knew that it needed to be done, not because, if I do this, I can get some dollars, because that's what has happened. And the point B, if you wasn't getting the dollars, would you be doing it? The answer to that question is, at least from my estimation and research, roughly about 90% wouldn't.
Right.
So here we are dealing with a situation where we have tons and tons of organizations and groups, but for real, their intent, their real focus is to play Ring Around the Rosie.
Well, this is true. I mean, the economic component one cannot easily ignore. Now, having said that, we have to sacrifice, even if the sacrifice, you won't see it in your lifetime. Maybe you're sacrificing for the future. But the same way people took risks and you had the Fred Douglases and Martin Delaney's and Henry Highland Garnett's, we have to, you know, and we had free black men during chattel slavery that threw themselves in a battle that they didn't even have to. Some classic insurrections was plotted and schemed out by those people who were free. So I'm saying that you have to sacrifice, and it's going to be some scars along the way. But if we're not willing to be scarred, then we're in the wrong business. If we're not willing to sacrifice, we're in the wrong business. So why you know, you got civil rights leaders now that are millionaires.
Right.
Well, what kind of civil rights are they doing? They went from civil rights to civil rights business. They're not in the civil rights struggle. This is civil rights business.
Right.
So, you know, so, I mean, just think about it. Some of the most prominent civil rights leaders in the country, they're all millionaires. And the tragedy of it all, we don't even have to say their names, because you know who they are. And you know that they have a yearly income. It's a 7- to 8-digit number. So, I mean, how much against the power structure? They don't want to see that power structure change now, because that's their gravy train. They're all eating from the same trough. So they don't want to see any significant changes in the American construct. And this is what's feeding them.
Right.
So if it comes down to the system or us, they're going to give us up 9 out of 10 times, or maybe 99 out of 100 times. They're going to do just enough to keep a following, because that's the only thing they have to do.
Right.
Keep a following. Malcolm said it best in that message to the grassroots. He talked about that these leaders are just there to control you. They're not there to lead you. They're there to handcuff you. Every time you want to make a real step forward, they're the ones that's going to reel you back in. And that's what we have now in the battle for Mumia is a noble one. It's really something great, because that's symbolic. Even though it's one person, and there are people that are incarcerated every day. I mean, that recent report out of Washington says it's up to 33% now that the likelihood of you being arrested if you're black is 33%. It used to be 24%. It's escalated to 33%. That's 1 out of 3 now. Will be arrested in his lifetime. Now, those are staggering numbers. But there's no clarion call being put out by the NAACP, National Action Network, Urban League. No one's discussing it. 1 out of 3? That's earth-shattering.
Wow.
I mean, you can't get worse until it gets to 1 out of 2. So I'm saying that if that's not going to motivate us, what will? So, you know, when it comes to whether it's Mark Mariel, Jesse Jackson, Reverend Sharpton, Ben Jealous, what are they saying about the incarceration rate? I mean, the fastest growing rate is among black women.
Right, which
being arrested at an alarming rate.
Yes, and with that said, one of the things that we were discussing today at the workshop forum that I was the moderator for, it focused on gentrification, but I had to raise the question
as to how many people had heard that this past week in Tennessee, if a woman is pregnant and the child ends up on drugs as a result of the woman taking drugs while she's pregnant, she will be locked up. This law is passed.
Well, when you see and hear things like that, you know without saying it, that does not apply to white women.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're rich, they're not going to jail. They'll go to some private place and be treated and whatever, but that's a law for black folks. Now, when all is said and done with any law, you know, even though we know there's a spirit of the law and a letter of the law,
mm-hmm.
the bottom line is the law is the law, and that's this, as Michael Court even put it, he just made it plain that the law is just like a gun. Who's ever holding the gun makes the call.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bottom line. So, and he's right, because when all is said and done, who's going to arrest a Kennedy? Who's going to arrest a Rockefeller? And that's what I'm saying. Who's going to do that? I don't care what they did.
Mm-hmm.
You better go huddle. You're not going to apply the law. You better go huddle and think about what you're doing. But when it comes to our people, please. I mean, look, I mean, sis, you in Philadelphia. You grew up under the Rizzo regime.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything went. There was no respect for law. Powerful white men don't respect the law. They do what they want to do. I mean, you know, I mean, we heard about Rizzo here. I mean, he was a legend in law enforcement circles. He's as legendary as Bull Connor. I think more brutal.
Yeah, I kind of would agree.
He's second to none.
Yeah.
He's second to none. Worse than Gates here, worse than Safer, you know, Bratton and all of them. I mean, that's how large his shadow looms. I mean, it's incredible what he was able to do in Philly. All through the ranks, all the way up to mayor.
Right. Absolutely.
So I'm just saying things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we have Bratton back, who was the architect of Stop Questioning Frisk, and William de Blasio brought him back. And nobody's even saying anything because they've all kissed the ring, so everybody's quiet on this. Brought back the architect of Stop Questioning Frisk. And he ran on the last 6 months. He ran against Stop Questioning Frisk, that he would change it. And he brought back the architect.
You know,
he's kept
that said.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, Brother Mike, I have to reiterate and say how, you know, we're very concerned about Reverend Pinckney because we're seeing something very similar here. Reverend Pinckney, as you know, and many of our listeners know, had been reporting regularly on the murders that were occurring in Benton Harbor of young black men or black men, period, and how it was just kind of being poo-pooed away. So that was one area that he was known to consistently provide information about. Then, in issuing a recall for the mayor, and isn't it ironic, for lack of a better word, that within the matter of days, when a brother by the name of, oh gosh, his first name just escaped me, but his last name is Muhammad, isn't it ironic that this brother, whose last name is Muhammad, makes a public announcement that he's going to run for mayor in May, and then Reverend Pinckney gets locked up a few days later?
Well, I mean, there's some things you just can't make up, you know? I mean, and this sounds like one of them. I mean, if you saw that in the movie, you would say, come on, that's not even realistic. But the fact is, Reverend Pinckney, to those that don't know him, is a straight shooter.
Mm-hmm.
He tells it like it is. He doesn't sugarcoat anything. Very honest man, very intelligent, and he really needs the support of people in Benton Harbor. And even though he has a lot of people that believes in him, and he obviously has a church background, at the same time, people have to say, not on my tour.
That's right.
You really have to take an attitude that no one will get a clear shot at this man when I'm around. So they need to surround him and really do everything they can to empower this brother, because he's a real good brother, and he's exposed the NAACP and some of its dastardly deeds in that area, which opens you up to attack. Because let me tell you something, sis, there's no one who can pick up the phone better than the collaborators that are against our people. They are prominent organizations. See, put it this way. Right now, if I said to you, Sister Filet, call a number right now, such and such is going on, you know what you would say to me? Who should I call? But the people that are in these traditional civil rights organizations, they know who to call and make you disappear. You say, what? Why would you say something like that, Brother Michael? Because it's true. They know who to call because they have strict assurances that I'm giving you Harlem. I'm giving you Brooklyn. I'm giving you Bed-Stuy section of Brooklyn. Anything happen in Bed-Stuy, call me. I'll take care of it. You know, people like that. Call me. Anything jump off in Newark, call me. You know why they can say that? Because they have done their due diligence and have given their mind, body, and spirit to these people. And they, in turn, tell them, if you ever have a problem, this is what we'll do. You know, Adam Abdul Hakim, you know, was selling drugs for the police department. And it was a real big case when they were trying to catch him and all this other stuff. But he exposed what they were doing, and they turned around and actually killed him. So, you know, obviously it happened upstate in the jail. But I'm just saying that there are people, and when he had a problem, let's say he had a problem with a drug dealer when he was 14, 15, 16, all he had to do was tell the cops, so-and-so's doing such and such, and that person disappeared.
Right.
Now, that's part of a criminal side. But believe me, they have people and all these civil rights organizations that can pick up a phone on you. I mean, the same way drug dealers back in the 60s was able to call cops when they had problems with Black Panthers. You know, if they had any nationalist organization was telling these cats, no, you can't do this over here. You can't sell drugs to kids.
Right.
Well, they would pick up a phone. They say, oh, really? They pick up a phone. Mm. That person going to get locked up or something because they messing with the operation. So I'm saying that with all the good work you do and you outing somebody, you letting them know this is the person that's doing X, Y, Z in our community, don't think that person can't make a call on you.
Oh, listen, I've told the story a few times, Brother Mike, where shortly after the Million Women March, I had a meeting with a very influential man in Philly. I can tell the story now because he's made transition. He was over 100 years old, and he made transition. But prior to him making transition, I had a meeting with him, and he set me in his office, and he said, look, he said, you're out here by yourself, so you need to come on in with us. We'll run you for Congress. We'll give you whatever it is you think you want. And, you know, you need to just come on in with us. So I understand very clearly, and I'm going to fast forward and say that after I refused, and I didn't refuse just outright say no, I just said, well, you know, thank you very much for, you know, considering me for that kind of a position, but I unfortunately not interested. And he said, look, he said, let me tell you. He said, you're out here by yourself. He said, do you know that a cop can pull you over and look into your trunk or your hubcap and find drugs?
That's
and
right.
I'm like, huh? And he said, yeah. He said, it certainly has happened. And he named the person here in Philly who that cop wasn't drugs, but they pulled him over for something else. And, you know, he was letting me know that, you know, he took care of it, and that was all there was to that. And it was. That was all there was to that. So he was letting me know, you know, that his influence and his power reached, you know, to where it could be beneficial for me.
Right.
And I told him, I said, sir, I thank you so very much for, you know, again, considering this offer to me. I'm, you know, just thank you. I said, but I'm going to tell you. I said, I don't drink. I don't smoke. And I don't do drugs. I said, I don't even eat meat. So if y'all getting ready to try to set me up, you better come with something better than that.
But he was
so
right. So
Brother Mike, he looked at me, this old man looked at me, and he started laughing. And he said, you know what? I said, what's that, sir? He said, I like you.
Wow.
True story? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I understand very clearly.
But what he
said,
he was right.
That was my first wake-up call. That was my first wake-up call because I had heard about stuff. You know, you hear
okay,
stuff.
Okay, you laid it all out. You laid it all out. You don't have many character flaws, but guess what? It doesn't matter. Those people close around, you know what they'll say? It's a shame they did that to Sister Filet. She don't even drink or smoke. Okay, somebody's going to say that, but what good is that going to do you when you're behind bars?
Yep.
Don't you think it was some people that said, you know what Adam Clayton Powell said about what's-her-name was right, Esther James, said everything he said about it was right. It's a shame they suing this man and now he can't even come into New York. Well, they saying that, but they ain't doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Clayton Powell ain't just make up a name and make up a scenario, something that could cost him his life.
Right.
He knew it because he knew the streets.
Yes.
So he knew that. He knew, you know, the mob, and he knew about the payoffs, and he knew who the bad person was.
Mm-hmm.
But it got him in a world of trouble talking about it.
Right.
But he had the courage to talk about it. So I'm saying when that person said that to you, he was being very nice, sis.
Oh, I know.
Because he asked
but you,
he put a carrot in front of you. He offered you a congressional seat, sis, and you turned it down. Now, who turns down a congressional seat? It just doesn't happen in America, sis. I'm telling you what I know. Who turns down a congressional seat?
They told me they would cover everything.
And the thing is, when you do that, that's almost an act of defiance. That's like war.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
For you to turn that down, it's like, wait. This sister's telling us we can't buy her? Well, who does she think she is?
Right. But the beautiful thing about that particular situation was that for whatever reason, my brother, he found it to be, if not amusing, at least admirable, and decided to let me walk.
Yeah, well, it was something about you that he just plain liked, and he called the dogs off. I mean, it's just that simple.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he could have very easily said, you know, she says such and such. You know, go and do what y'all got to do.
Mm-hmm.
He basically just said, let her live. That, you know, let her go on. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put somebody else in there. Don't worry about it. Because no one turns down a congressional seat, sis. Trust me. You're on a fast track to being a millionaire. You're going to be taken care of. You know, please. That's the life of luxury. You know, I mean, who you know that has a seat just gives that seat up and walks away from it.
Well,
they all try to do 40 years in there.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, everybody. Ain't nobody giving up their seat. You see it. You see some of them old folks in Congress?
Absolutely.
They 70, 80 years old. They ain't going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
You got a U.S. Senate seat or a congressional seat? You're not going nowhere. So I'm just saying that to say that when you make those type of decisions, you know, even though, you know, it's a real quick decision and things like that you make, it reverberates in certain corners. And the same way you made that decision is the same way people go the other way, and now they got you for life.
Right.
Because you're going to have to
exactly.
work for them for life. All of
exactly.
your core principles are gone now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you turn
right.
if you turn on them and you've been riding with them, something can happen to you real peculiar. Like, who did that happen to? Mickey Leland? When
mm-hmm.
his plane went
mm-hmm.
into a mountain that's been there for a million years and rode right into a mountain in Africa. They told him not to deliver the food stuff to whatever country it was in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And he insisted mm-hmm. on doing it. I mean, but you know, from my understanding, I've been told that that's some Boulé stuff, but in any event, he tried to feed some people, and he was told not to. And
you
that's
know,
what
and
it
it's,
translated
it's interesting.
To.
It's interesting that you said that because this particular person was very well known and would always talk about how many doctors and lawyers he had made. So because, you know, for those who do not know the history of the Boulé, where it got started is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, Howard, right? Washington, D.C.?
Philadelphia.
Oh, right.
That's right.
Initially it was
uh-huh.
Philly. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Well, you know, so, yeah, I mean, so that person who was, you know, 100 years old, I mean, if you don't get the 100 by being no fool, and
that's right.
Obviously, he knew a lot, and, you know, I mean, for all the right reasons, he took a liking to you. So, you know, nothing bad happened at that time, but
mm-hmm.
he offered you a good life, you know. And
yep.
I know of people that have been offered mayor seats and
mm-hmm.
Other elected official seats, you know, those kind of things. And the people who offer that is people that can put you in there.
Absolutely.
And so when all is said and done, the people that can put you someplace can unseat you
mm-hmm.
just as easily, and they can deplete your resources in a fight because
right.
they have resources mm-hmm. that, and that's all part and parcel of a counterintelligence program. Sometimes it's not
mm-hmm.
to kill you or
right.
neutralize you, to silence you. Sometimes it's to deplete your resources. So
that's
if they
right.
put you in jail and you raise the bail money, they put you in jail again, they put
mm-hmm.
some of your comrades in jail, they're depleting your resources.
Mm-hmm.
So they're bringing
right.
you down in increments.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's all part of a process. So I'm just saying, whether big or small, this, you know, I know that you had callers, because I caught the tail end of people who there was some reluctance to use the term, you know, white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
what else can you call it? Other than what it is, because when its tentacles are stretching in every kind of direction and it's engulfing communities. It's engulfing
mm-hmm.
even your imagination, where you can't even
right.
think your way out of it. And
right.
if you can't
That's
think,
right.
you can't act. If you can't talk, you can't act. And this is how, you know, foreboding it can be. You know, I mean, it's really, really can be overpowering. And so, actually, it's not a lot of people doing what we do, standing the way we stand. And it's a miracle to see people that are standing. It's a miracle to see an attorney that will really fight for your case, you know, really fight to, you know, for justice. You don't find a lot of those attorneys. Some of the most famous attorneys, they gave, you know, they gave people back to the system. I mean, they've done it. I mean, they don't want to admit it, but, you know, you only get a certain amount of big cases, and then they tell you, no, you can't win this one. They did it with Arthur Lewis. They've told, you know, Automatics, that's another big one. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you insist on forging ahead, then things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then why do other attorneys have a 30, 40-year uninterrupted career?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes they complied and said, okay.
Right.
You know, and that's just the way it is. I mean, I'm not making this up. That's the truth. That sometimes they just say, you know, okay, that person doesn't go, but let me look good. Let me make it look like I'm fighting.
Right.
And they say, you got it. No, we don't want you to look like no chump. Now, we want you to look good. Look good, but you know the things that can get this person off. Don't do it. But on other things, just argue some other things and look good. And that's what they do. You know, so, I mean, that's the state of affairs we get. We don't have attorneys that's going to lay it all on the line for us. We don't have people in corporate America that's going to lay it on the line for us. And certainly, we're not developing the type of leadership that's even qualified to stand up to the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have leaders that like that.
No,
we don't have the general.
Like,
we don't have the people that can stand up to the Schwarzkopfs of the world.
Mm-hmm. With that said, obviously, at some point, we better be about the business of doing that.
Strengthen
so
the organizations from top to bottom.
Right, and that's what I wanted to hear, and that's what I want our family listening audience to hear. Okay, family, we only have about 10 minutes. Brother Mike brought it to us this week, as we promised he would, gave us some insight and information about not only how to recognize, but what are some of the things that we need to do, and certainly to improve the situation, especially as pertains to organizations, groups, and so forth. How are we going to develop these things for ourselves? So this is what we're now talking about and what it is that we now feel we have to begin to do. We're going to take a couple of calls before we close out for tonight. It's been a very hectic day, but a very wonderful day. And as Brother Mike just mentioned, we got to do more than just say free Mumia Gujumal, obviously. And so that is a dialogue that we definitely plan to have in the near future. But for now, we certainly will welcome your calls, your questions, rather. Before Brother Mike leaves us tonight, I think some of the things that have been said were definitely on point, and I'd like to hear what your comments are. So please push 1 now, and we will do that for the next 5 minutes or so, and then we're going to close out because I need to get some rest. I'm a day. This was a long day, a long couple of days. But at any rate, as I said, so we push 1 now, and we will certainly take a question. Okay, caller, you're at 7940. We're going to take your comment or question now. 7490, your mic is open. 7940.
Hello, greetings, Empress.
Greetings, sister. How are you?
Oh, fine. When you said you was trying to get in contact with Reverend Pinckney, I immediately called Reverend Pinckney and told him that you was trying to get in contact with him, and everybody is on his side and supporting him, and
okay.
That they wanted to you wanted to speak to him. So he told me, I said, well, when can you be on the show? He said next Saturday, and he told me to have you reach out to him and remind him, and I'll remind him too. So he said he'll come on next week.
All right, that's what I'm talking about. See,
see what we can do? I mean, just like that. Love it.
Mm.
Love it. All right, my sister.
And
thank you so very
much. Also, one more thing, sister. I appreciate the guest, Michael. Is that his name? I appreciate the brother Michael talking about the COINTELPRO because everything he said, I can identify with the techniques they use, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Thank
you, sister, for your kind words.
All right. Thank you, sister. Okay, we're going to take one more call. Let's see now, caller. I want to go back to Sister Hattie. I think she wanted to close us out tonight. Sister Hattie, you have a comment or question for us?
Yes, Brother Mike.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I would like to ask you this question. When Reverend Pinckney, when this all started with him, I was listening to his show the week prior to this, and he said these people had been to his home and they wanted to speak with him on his show. Then he said he told them, no, I don't need to speak with you, something to that effect. I'm ad-libbing. And then he asked them if they had a search warrant. If they don't, then we would just keep this on. Now, my question is this. I understand that when they came to arrest him a few days after that, they brought a big SWAT team out and everything. Now, this is about what's called voter fraud. Why would you need a SWAT team to go and pick up a 65-year-old community activist? And my question to you is, can we, as on a national effort or campaign, tell them that this is excessive force and what's going on here?
Well, the fact is, very quickly, is you don't need a SWAT team to pick up a person. You could just tell them to step out of the house and what have you, and you can effect an arrest. But it's an intimidation factor. It creates a chilling effect to all those that view it. It lets you know that you can be had if you resist. So it pays dividends depending on what you want to achieve. And all is said and done. It's telling the black community you can't do anything about it. So that's why it's, you know, that's why it's being done that way.
I understand why it's being done that way. I get that. But the question still is there such thing as excessive force? Like a person who's not shown any kind of around being violent.
Well, the act
whatever.
Is excessive, but they won't have to use force when you know. I mean, look, it's not productive in a true sense to bring a bomb in to catch a roach. You know, you'll
exactly.
use a bomb, but the fact is, when you know there are certain philosophies, and Colin Powell, as a chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or you know. As the Secretary of Defense, he believed in overpowering and overwhelming, you know, your enemy. And, you know, former presidential hopeful Buchanan said it's always better to kill too many than to kill too few. So those that are in power believe in using that power, and even if it's excessive and it's successful, then it's a good thing.
Okay. That's how
wow.
I think. And I just wanted to say, in terms of the laws, I think this is another action that we can take as a people. We know that none of these laws are meant for anybody except us. And I think what's his name? Richard Pryor said that so well in that joke, just us. That's who these laws are made for. And so that being said, it's a double-edged sword, I think, for individuals who say, you run into a Rockefeller, you run into anyone who's a billionaire, multimillionaire, whatever, and then you do not want to arrest them. At the same token, there's another side of that sword that if you don't do your job, you can still have some problems as law enforcement. And we know the Stand Your Ground, the child protection laws, those were laws, Stand Your Ground. When these people start passing laws, legislation, we ought to be looking at it all. I think that's where our key factor is here, Stand Your Ground. Look who died under Stand Your Ground. Well, we had the one guy over there that died from it, the one white guy. Other than that, it's been black children, young black people.
Well, look, 100 blacks in law enforcement, we fought for John White, a black man who allegedly killed a young white man who surrounded his house with six other people. He was the seventh. And they surrounded his house threatening to kill his son and rape his wife. And they fought
that.
Over a gun, and the young white man was killed, 16 years old, was killed as a result of him trying to take the gun out of John White's hand. But John White was defending his family, and the New York State authorities put him in jail, even though he was defending his family, because they're telling him they don't care what the reason is. How dare you shoot a white man?
Exactly.
And they went to his house late at night, threatening to kill his son and wife. So I'm just saying, you know, they're going to use the law the way they see fit, because that's truly what power is. Power is when you force somebody else to see and submit to your reality, to their reality, not yours.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's what power is when all is said and done. And that's why you have a SWAT team to come in and get a 65-year-old preacher.
Exactly. And I understand there's a march in May in Benton Harbor that I think we want people to show up at.
All right.
Well, we will definitely find out about it on Saturday when Reverend Pinckney calls into the program. We will hear directly from him. Again, he's been on our program on numerous occasions. I'm just hoping he doesn't have it on the 10th. Because for May 10th, family, again, let us repeat, it's not only our kickoff rally for the National Campaign for the Elimination of Violence and Abuse of Women and Girls of African Descent. We need to speak for ourselves. All of these groups, for the most part, that talk about violence to women are headed up by white women or some other people. We need to change that immediately, and we're going to. So on May 10th, we kick off a national campaign that black women, African women, will engage in and organize around our issues. And with that, for that day, we're calling for a national day for Marissa Alexander. So next week we'll give you more information on some of the things that we're hoping you can do, telephone conference calls. Write to Marissa. Send her a note of encouragement. There's several things that we're going to have information for you about calling the governor or contacting the governor's office, et cetera, for next Saturday. Brother Michael, I want to thank you again so much for these past 3 weeks in particular and just for all that you do. And it was so wonderful to see you today.
Oh, and the same here. I thought it was wonderful to see you laboring hard for our people, and it was a joy. And thank you so much for your program. And just remember that the fastest growing rate among people that are being incarcerated are young black women. So with all
you know,
keep a special eye on that. And certainly with Marissa Alexander and others, in your sights and what you're going to plan around that, just keep that in mind, that we cannot have our young sisters being incarcerated and destroying their lives at an early age. We just can't allow that. So with all you do, just add that to all the other things that you're doing, focusing on that and think it through on how you can stop that, because that's important.
And that's why we created the national campaign, because we've been saying this now, Brother Mike, for several years. We know that the newest target, and when I say target, I'm talking about with some real kind of stuff, as we indicated, this new law that is now in Tennessee. We're going to talk more about that next week, too. So we've been working on this. We knew that this was coming. And there are some other things we know that are coming down the pike. Because remember, once they have our mothers, our sisters, our women, then they have not only greater access to the children, they can get the children. Because remember, if a woman is incarcerated, where's the child 9 times out of 10 going to go?
True,
so
and
this
just
is a
remember,
double-edged sword.
Remember, Tennessee is the birthplace of the Klan, and it's also the place where Dr. King was assassinated. Keep that in mind.
Indeed. Family, we thank you all again for tuning in this week. We will be back next week, stronger, better, moving forward. Again, we've been talking with Brother Mike Grays, and, of course, we had Sister Hattie, we had Sister Coca, and we have you. And so we will be back next week. We're going to leave kind of like we started today. I forgot to say we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, so I want to put that in there and make sure I say that, and that we're always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. But we're going to leave you tonight with some words from Mumia Abu-Jamal. Again, we all of you for tuning into this segment of New Day Resurrection Liberation, and we leave you, as we oftentimes greet you, in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. But remember, there can be no real peace, no real Hotep, until it's truly Ma'at.
To our supporters, on this, my 60th year of life, I am compelled to share with you, all my supporters, a sense of thanks beyond anything you've ever heard and anything I've ever said. For I am here among the living because of each and every one of you, all of you, known and unknown, who have joined us in this battle for life, liberty, and justice. Some of you have been beaten. Some of you have been jailed. Most of you have been threatened. Yet you've continued struggle, no matter what, for years. We are not where we want to be, but we are here because you are there. Your struggle has become our struggle, and it has touched many, many people the world over. Make no mistake. I breathe today because you fought for my breath. The state hates you and attacks you because you fought for me with every step of the way. I'm humbled by your support and energized by it. Struggles like this prove the possible, and we are not done. They have had to rewrite laws for us, but like sunshine, like rain, we just keep on moving, keeping on coming. I thank you all for what you have done and for what we have yet to do. I love you all. Wanna move. Lawless John Africa, for freedom, from imprisoned nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Please come. Let's bring Mumia home expeditiously. Promoted to the sender, together we shall win.